So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it is all about the 13-inch MacBook Pro with an M2 chip, a computer I just called absolutely baffling in my review. So our reviews are up. We're going to be diving into all of that. That laugh you hear is Cherie L. Smith from Laptop Mag, Editor-in-Chief of Laptop Mag. Hello, Cherie.
Hello.
We'll get right to that. But first, as always, folks, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. If you're digging the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. That's always super helpful. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. And if you're listening to this, you can always join us Thursday mornings, typically around 10 a.m. Eastern, on our YouTube channel for a live stream. You can see our pretty faces. You can have some Q&A. Sometimes we'll show off gadgets. It's a fun time. Come join us. Okay, so the 13-inch MacBook Pro with an M2 chip. I found this computer to be very, very confusing when Apple first announced it, because it's literally the last MacBook Pro, which was not that different than the last other few MacBook Pros, like same case. The last one actually lost two USB-C ports as well, right? So I found this really confusing. Cherie, what was your first impression of this computer when Apple announced it?
I mean, it's a MacBook.
Pro?
It's doing what it's supposed to do in terms of being an incremental upgrade. It's not that it's a bad laptop. That's not it at all. Mm-hmm. It performs very well. It's just, I would agree with your word baffling, because like you have the Air and it's fanless and it's doing the same thing. And it's a tad bit cheaper with a better screen, better display, better webcam, MagSafe charging now. And then we got the Pro.
It's just so confusing. Yeah, the new MacBook Air, which also has an M2 chip, has all those nice things. It's a nice newer design. It's a little thinner. The screen, they kind of shaved off some of those bezels. Whereas this one has the old thick bezels, which I think really dates this computer.
The bezels, I dinged it for the bezels. Like, it's the year of our Lord 2022, and I do not understand what is going on with the bezels. Like, where everyone is trying to shave every little millimeter off, Apple's like, nah. And you know why? Because they know you're going to buy it. They don't like it takes years and years and years of being a squeaky wheel to get Apple to move on the slightest design change. So we're going to be saying this for a few more years at least, and then they'll cut it down a scooch.
I think this is a courage for Apple, don't you think?
What's the opposite of courage is laziness. And I think what I dinged this computer for, which to be fair, it is perfectly fine. Like, it is a nice computer. It is faster than the last MacBook Pro. The M2 chip is a decent upgrade. If somebody stumbles into an Apple store and buys this, it's fine. I think I'm just a little annoyed because every time I talk to Apple about this, just to get a straight answer about why they didn't do anything for this design, they put on this like robotic smile, and it's the same script line from every single person. We think it produces a lot of value. Sure, Apple, I'm sure it produces a lot of value for you. I don't think it's producing a lot of value for consumers who are expecting thinner bezels, more modern screens or bigger screens in their 13-inch machines right now. So let's talk about what happened here, right? They just put the M2 chip in the last case. That's it. So that means it's the same Retina display. That means it's the same thick bezels. That means it still only has two USB-C ports, one of which will disappear when you're charging this computer too. Another thing, this computer has the touch bar, and I can't remember ever liking it. This is the only computer with the touch bar. It's like Apple had a whole bunch of old stock that they just had to dump this into. I don't want my function keys to disappear. I don't want my shortcuts to change every time I move to a different app. It is dumb. It's annoying, and it should tell you something that all the other MacBooks don't have a touch bar. They just have function keys and shortcut keys all in one place, because that's how we use keyboards. So touch bar, bad idea. Another knock against this computer. I just found that all very strange compared to the new Air, which has so many more features. and is going to be slightly cheaper to begin with. The one big benefit, which is worth shouting out here, is just like last time, this new MacBook Pro has a fan, right? It has active cooling and a more elaborate cooling system. So if you're doing video rendering or 3D editing or something, it should be better for sustained workloads. But I think for 90% of people, my argument is the MacBook Air, even if you're some sort of professional, will serve you better. Or if you really need professional like stuff, go up to the MacBook Pro 14-inch, which starts a lot more expensive. But I noticed this when I was like speccing it out. If you put both computers up to 16 gigabytes of RAM, a terabyte of storage, like the bare minimum of what you'd want in a professional machine, the price difference is only $300, which at that point seems ridiculous. Like, then just get the 14, right? What do you think, Sheree?
I mean, the reason for the Pro at this point is to push people to buy the Air or the 14 or the 16 inch. It's a nice to have. Like, if you like, it's kind of, you know what it, you know what it reminds me of? It's like when Apple makes the SE, or they make what will be the iPhone 14. You get all the colors and things of that nature with the 14. If you want the premium, you start you lose color, you gain features. Like, the Pro is the colorful iPhone.
It should be priced accordingly, though, right? It should be $800 or $900. Like, I like the SE because it's a budget phone, it's a budget entry point for a lot of people into the world of iPhone. This is, hey, more expensive than the Air, right? This is a premium product with very more limited functionality than some of the cheaper products. So that's why I'm really confused by it.
I mean, it's calculated capitalism. Like, like, basically, if like we're here to tell our readers and our listeners and what have you, hey, this is a solid laptop, and it is. But for the money, you either want to go this way or that way.
Yeah,
it's calculated capitalism at its best.
That's a good way of putting it. Sherlyn, like, any thoughts on this thing? Like, you were there. You tested the new Air.
I did.
You really like that, right? Wow.
Uh-oh. First of
all, I'm sorry there's no Android laptop for you to test instead. Jeez.
Listen, first of all, I'm a PC person, so that's already my... Exactly. Thank you, Sheree. I already, you know, have a slight bias in that respect. But my question here, too, is that, like, for this review, the 13-inch MacBook Pro with M2, the newsworthiness of it, I had to come at this from the journalist point of view here, which is that this is our first experience of the M2 chip, right? How did that do? I mean, that's my main question. Is also, like, I don't care that much about the 13-inch MacBook Pro hardware casing, that sort of thing, because I know it's boring. It's not really doing anything great. But the M2 chip, this is our first taste of it. What's it do for battery life? I know we can't compare to the MacBook Air, but I wonder if that's one of the differences between it and the MacBook Air as well, right?
You go for it, Sheree.
The M2, it did what Apple said it's going to do. If Apple, like, at this point, to doubt Apple is, you're just, I have a bridge I can sell you in Brooklyn. It's definitely faster, more powerful, all the things, more power efficient than the M2, because a lot of people were upset, like, okay.
Than the old M1, yeah.
It's only supposed to be better than the M1. It's calculated capitalism. We still have a 14 and a 16 to refresh. And are we going to give you this? We're going to give you the same M2? No, we're going to give you the M2 Max and the M2 Max Pro. This is how they get you. So it passed the assignment. It's giving what it's supposed to give. The math, she is mathing, because this is exactly what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to be better than M1. It is not supposed to be better than M1 Max and M1 Max Pro.
It's not, too. Like, if you look at our benchmarks, I put up a benchmark table in my review. The M1 Pro, the M1 Ultra, and the Max, I forget which is Ultra the fastest now. But I think
Ultra is a name we made up.
Pro Max. Because, like, you know, then they started, you know, soldering chips together. Like, hey, I heard you like chips. Let me solder two of them together.
And now give you some chips with your chips.
Yeah. Now, the M1 Ultra is the one that's in the studio, right? The fastest one. But in my benchmark, the M1 Pro and the M1 Max, certainly, even the M1 Pro is a lot faster than the M2. Like, clearly, this is focused on this side of the market where $1,000 to $1,500, like, people getting computers around there. It's faster. Battery life is pretty solid. I got like 17 hours in my test, which is a little more than last time. Did you like have any major revelations with this chip tree?
For us, the battery test went up significantly. We have, our script is basically web surfing continuously over Wi-Fi.
I know that script.
I know you do, baby. And we got 18 hours and 20 minutes. The last iteration got 1644, I want to say off the top of my head. So like definitely a big jump. And like we definitely saw the M2 kick the M1's butt in benchmarks. I didn't like, I'm going to do a deeper dive on the other chips this week. So I haven't, I'm not even going to touch that, but I already knew. Like, it's not designed to be better than the other two chips. Otherwise, why would you buy the other two systems?
A lot of people are coming at me saying like, I feel, should I buy a 14-inch MacBook Pro now or 16-inch? And I'm telling people, yes.
Yes.
Those are still faster, even if they're M1 expanded chips. One thing I will mention here is that when I last reviewed the M1 MacBook Air and Pro, they benchmarked exactly the same, right? It is the exact same chip. The only difference is sustained workload. So if you're doing a lot of video editing, something that takes a long time to render, at that point, the MacBook Pro's fans will kick in and give you more speed, whereas the Air may start to throttle. We don't have the new Air to test yet, but I think we're probably going to see the same thing. Like, Apple managed to do that 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. So we'll likely be the same thing now. Like, Cherie, for yourself, you do some pro work too. Like, you do a lot of different work. Would you still lean towards the Air versus this one?
I am on a never-ending pursuit for power. So I am,
as we all are. Yeah, that's why we do this. Yeah.
I personally would, if I was working specifically on a Mac, which I do in my professional life, I would either wait for the 14 or the 16 to get refreshed. If I absolutely positively could not hold out, then I would get the 13 Pro, just because I have things that are like video editing and photo editing and things of that nature to do. But man, I would hate spending that much. Like,
I don't want to give them the satisfaction. I don't want to say
spending that money. And I hate spending that money on a Mac, period, because I am platform agnostic. And while I am very, very intrigued to see this Resi 8 playthrough, I'm curious what Capcom had to do to fit it in the box. And what other games are they going to offer? Because honestly, and the demo that I saw in my house, because maybe it was better in Corpatino and it was running smoother, it looked mighty choppy.
It was really choppy, yeah.
I don't know if I would have shown this, fellas.
I ran 3D Mark. Like, it's not that this chip doesn't have 3D capabilities, it's the developers, right? Like, people just don't want to bring big budget games to Macs, and that is Apple's fault. That is Apple's fault.
It absolutely is.
It's
like, okay, don't tell me it can game. How many times do you expect me to play Shadow the Tomb Raider?
Exactly.
How many times?
That's my one benchmark, is Shadow the Tomb Raider.
You can't even say Fortnite because you're beefing with Epic. You're not friends with GOG. You're not friends. Like, where are these games? And don't tell me Apple Arcade. No one wants to hear that.
Don't say Apple Arcade, because an iPad can play all the Apple Arcade games. That doesn't count for anything. It is. I like Apple Arcade. I like it on my phone. I like it on tablets, on a computer. Seems less good. One thing I want to point out here too that I noticed in my review, I think this is the only pro labeled device from Apple without a promotion screen. I think that thing also really gets to me. Promotion gives you a higher refresh rate. It makes scrolling a lot smoother. Everything looks nicer. I'm spoiled by promotion screens. I jumped up to the iPhone 13 Pro just for that. I would like an iPad Pro eventually, but we're seeing that on Windows laptops too, right? The Surface Laptop Studio has high refresh rates. We've reviewed a lot of like gaming laptops I think are really subtle that would make nice productivity machines like this too, like the Asus G14, Zephyrus G14. We did a Predator, Acer Predator Triton 500 SE. Both, like, there are a lot of gaming machines now that aren't as flashy, aren't as like blingy and embarrassing as old gaming machines. I would much rather have one of those than something like this, right?
I mean, I'm going to be a cadult for life, and I'm never going to say no. Give me my hair. Look at my hair. My hair is blue,
babe. Cadult.
Blue. Like, I will take all the RGB all the time and be proud of it in the office. But like, again, cadult. But I can appreciate an understated system. There is something. There is an elegance, and I mean, that's why it's so hard for Apple to change up the design, no matter how many times we scream and beg and plead, because they are literally the trendsetter. We saw all these funky designs, mm-hmm. and Apple just stuck with what simplicity and minimalism. And now when you go into a coffee shop or wherever, like all you see is that silver or space mm-hmm, gray mm-hmm. or maybe yep. rose gold if you lucked up and got yeah. one of those models, and just that Apple, like
you see Asus machines that are really trying to ape that style too, or at least they were for a while, not as much now, I think, but yeah.
I know we're talking around this. We're sort of getting at it. I also had this question earlier on, which is that, like, what's the gaming experience like on the MacBook Pro 13-inch with M2? But I think a question here is more that, like, are the chips capable? Like, I get that there's platform issues. I get that there's not a lot of games. But do you guys think that, like, the system itself can handle big games?
I was saying that a bit, right? Like, I ran the Shadow of the Tomb Raider benchmark. One of the benchmarks showed up in our video and looked really low frame rates. But if you do it at 1080p with, like, you know, medium settings, it gets over 30 FPS. They're capable. These things can run games as well as many, like, budget gaming laptops, I think, like, with budget GPUs. So it's not the hardware really that's the problem. It is Apple never making an ecosystem that was inviting for developers to make games. That's the thing. Like, Apple never cared about games. Steve Jobs, this goes back to the Steve Jobs era, right? Like, he never really leaned too much on games. So they got Apple Arcade. There are some Steam games, especially like simpler games like Disco Elysium, that will run on Macs. That's fine. Nothing too demanding though, aside from like Shadow of the Tomb Raider and Hitman 1 for some reason. So a bunch of older games. I hope that changes, especially with like the Capcom announcements. So I would never recommend any of these for gaming. Yeah.
We also had one question from a very eager live chat member, which is, how is the video editing? I know that part of our testing process is doing some kind of 4K video converting, right? Devendra, how'd that go?
I mean, it's fine. It's faster than the M1. You know, like I do a handbrake video conversion. I don't do big video editing. Like I don't do a lot of video editing.
Layers of tile animation. Yeah, we don't do that. Yeah.
But the handbrake's fine. Like, I'm talking raw computing power. We see that this is a good chip. I am just saying my main argument, the reason why we gave it a score of an 81, which is a bit lower than the last MacBook Pro and lower than most laptops, is because I don't agree with the value Apple is providing here. I think it's a real issue that this thing has all the problems of the last model that came out a year and a half ago. So me and Terrence O'Brien, our editor, we were just like, this thing, you shouldn't really be buying this thing, right? We would not recommend you buy this thing. If you're a consumer looking for a new MacBook, I would say lean Air. If you're a professional that really needs a new computer right now, spec up the MacBook Pro 14-inch. Like, it will not be that much different, and it will be much better for you in the long run. Mm-hmm.
Or wait for the next
You could wait. You don't know.
I would recommend waiting. If it's like that, just wait. Because honestly, there is no worse feeling, at least for me, than when I buy something and then couple months later it's obsolete. I mean, like, can I get a full year of it being like top of the top before you're like, oh, by the way.
It seems like Apple's almost on like a 6-month cycle. So it is June. It's the end of June now. So we probably won't get new MacBook Pros 14 and 16 until late fall, maybe winter, based on when the last one's launched. And it's like, if you need to work right now, like our podcast,
if your current machine isn't serving you,
who was running a 2012 MacBook Pro, you just need a machine now. You know, you sometimes
need it. Can we pause for a second? Because my chiropractor, bless his heart, asked me the other day, he was like, does the MacBook Air have a CD-ROM drive? I was like, mother, what?
That's adorable.
You know,
it's
what?
Cute.
So cute.
You say that, but Laptop Mag, we have a best page, best laptops with DVR. DVD drives. It's been so long. But it does so well. Someone sent me a CD yesterday, and I was baffled. Like, where am I supposed to put
what
this?
What do I do with this?
Like, am I putting, like, I have desktops. Mm-hmm. I don't even have, supposed to put this in a PlayStation or my Xbox?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I have a mid-tower desktop sitting right here. It's like full rows instead of a CD-ROM up front. It is just like three fans. It's just like, I need airflow. Awesome. I don't need optical discs. I will say for people, if you need a CD drive, don't buy a computer around that. Get a little external beauty exactly. and just like tote that around with you. It's fine. Yeah.
The point I was going to make though, is if your machine is that old, then maybe, yeah, I guess a 13-inch MacBook Pro with M2 will feel like an upgrade. And also if you have a specific mm-hmm. need, like a CD-ROM drive, maybe it's time to, like what the vendor said, buy an external accessory that can last you regardless of how your machine performs in future, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
So. I see a question here from Ben. How much faster was the video conversion on this computer compared to the M1? It was like, I have to look up the exact numbers, but it was like 10 to 15 seconds. So it's like a decent chunk. It is decently faster.
Well, that's quite a bit.
And yeah. It also has ProRes encoding and decoding capability. So, hey, if you're doing pro stuff, sure, this may be a better computer for you. But again, if you really need ProRes, then wait until the 14-inch to 16-inch get upgraded, because those computers will last you a much, much longer time. I think that's about it. Anything else, Cherie, that you want to mention about this computer? Like any broad takeaways for you when it comes to this or Apple in general?
I mean, it's a MacBook. and you get what you pay for with this MacBook. Like, you know, you get the M2 chip. That's basically why you're here. You're not getting mm-hmm. a better display. The display is still Retina. It's still beautiful. The vendor is right. It's missing ProMotion, and that is a bummer. Like, it didn't get the 1080p webcam.
Camera.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's still got those chunky. It's still very much the MacBook 13-inch that you knew and loved yeah. or felt kind of ambivalent about. I don't know. It's still. Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about the webcam, because you know you can always strap your phone onto the top of it.
Continuity camera.
I want to test that.
That.
It looks ridiculous, but I kind of want to test it. Yeah, it'll be better than whatever Apple's offering here. So, Cherie, first of all, I want to say, people, if you want to read more about our thoughts on these computers, check out Cherie's review over at Laptop Mag. Check out my review over at Engadget. We have a video, too, on our YouTube channel. Did you guys do a video, Cherie, or are you just like
texting? We're going to. Like, I have many thoughts, and I have a few face-offs to write before I really get into it, because I have things to say.
Things to say? Okay, Cherie, where can we find you on the internet these days?
You can always find me on Twitter or Instagram at Miss Smith 11. So M-I-S-S Smith. So three S's, not two, not four, but three S's, 11. And as always, check out myself and my talented staff on Laptop Mag. Some things that are coming down the pipe: Tech Support Showdown and our first annual Ultimate Home Office Awards. And then we're going right in the best and worst brands and a few other big ticket projects. So we are rocking and rolling.
Awesome. Love to see you thrive. And Cherie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having.
Let's move on to some other news. And I just want to quickly talk about this thing. Meta showed off a whole bunch of VR headset prototypes earlier this week because they want to pass this thing called the Visual Turing Test. So if you think of the Turing test as sort of like the dimension that an AI kind of has to pass to make you think it's a real person or alive, the visual Turing test is about making VR so realistic that you start to you cannot tell the difference between VR and reality, which is terrifying. But I sat in a meeting with Mark Zuckerberg and a bunch of journalists last week talking about this stuff. And none of these are going to be products we see anytime soon. But they showed off a bunch of different prototypes that can do things like get you higher, much higher resolutions. They can get you higher. They could get you HDR on your on the VR screen. The HDR one is a real trip. If you look at this article, the top image is just this this giant headset with two computer fans on the side. It has handlebars on the side because you can't wear it on your head. It's too heavy. So you have to hold it up like a pair of binoculars. But that's how they could test HDR, because you want like the brightness you get from a modern TV or computer monitor in there too. Other things like, what's up?
It looks a lot like the optometrist kind of like vision exam machine, right? Like it
does.
Blows puffs in your eyes.
Speaking of that, they also want to make these things better suited for people who need vision correction, like me, people who wear glasses. They are testing holographic displays that really thin out the technology. And let me just see. Wait, what is the thing? HoloCake 2 is the latest holographic one they showed off. And we have photos of Zuckerberg wearing that one. It looks like it looks like a pair of ski goggles, to be honest. And they have other prototypes doing things like electronic varifocal. So being able to adjust the focus of what you're looking at, like you do in real life.
Yeah.
So it uses eye tracking and varifocal lenses to sort of like, if in real life you have an object right in front of your face and the object at the other end of the room, your eyes will naturally adjust. Normally in VR, the display is flat, right? It is staying static. So it is hard to get that sense of eye movement and of depth. So varifocal lenses will kind of change to kind of make that happen. So they have, they have another prototype called Mirror Lake that's going to combine all these things. It has not been built yet, but Mirror Lake will be a headset that looks like ski goggles. It will have holographic lenses. It'll have HDR. It'll have high resolution screen. This thing is not on the horizon, right? They didn't even build a working prototype yet. It is conceptual. Maybe 5 to 7 years from now, we will see a device that can actually do some of this. But it was actually interesting to see, like, you know, Meta is still working on this stuff. I think there's a lot of criticism that they're not looking at high-end VR very much. They're not pushing the envelope because they just want easy consumer-ready Quest devices. I think Zuckerberg and crew just want to be like, hey, we're doing this. It's just really hard to bring it to the public. Do you care about any of this, Sherlyn? Like, you've got a Quest. You've been testing the Quest. Do you want more?
I like the Quest. I do. Yeah, of course I would love like VR that feels a bit more different. But I think as long as we're bound to headsets, it's going to be very difficult to push the technology a lot further. It also sounds a lot like Meta and team are being extremely ambitious with this. Like you said, right? 5 to 7 years in the future. And also the fact that they don't seem to be considering more like incremental high-end VR. They're looking at this sort of like wilder types of technology.
I mean, they're doing incremental too. Like Project Cambria is the higher end Quest we're expecting at the end of the year. So that is the more like it's getting slowly better. The Quest platform is there.
I like what we have on VR platforms, at least with the Quest right now, right? We've got, I think, Supernatural is great, Beat Saber is great, but am I at the stage where I want VR to feel like the real world, like the visual Turing test? I don't know. I will say though, when you talked about the visual correction thing in real time, it jumped, like it just forcefully brought to mind the image of VR or just regular goggles or headsets that would just do LASIK for you at home. And that sounds incredibly dangerous. And I don't want to give anyone ideas.
Not LASIK.
Do not put
it's
LASIK
more like
in the headset.
Don't do LASIK at home. Have you seen devices that do LASIK at home? That is a terrible idea.
No, they've never done because that would never happen. I'm just saying, do not do it.
It's a terrible idea. But these things, since they're glasses, if they're using the holographic screens and they can get really thin lenses, like just slipped in there, then the headset is your glasses, right? The headset has the correction that you typically get from glasses.
So you don't need to wear glasses under.
That's the thing. Yeah. That's kind of, you can kind of get that on Quest right now and a couple other headsets. So you just have to buy custom lenses. So anyway, I thought this was cool. Sherlyn, you had something else you want to mention?
Yeah.
From Meta?
I mean, think about like moving from a VR that's so surreal to a VR that deals with the realities of life, namely money. Meta Pay. Have you heard of Meta Pay? It's basically Facebook Pay, and then they're going to turn it into... they're rebranding it Meta Pay, for one thing, and then they are going to basically use that as a way for, I guess, people to have transactions in the metaverse, which is kind of sad or I guess necessary. But I don't know. It's tied in with some of the like other news that happened this week, which is that Meta said it won't take a commission from creators on Facebook and Instagram until 2024. You saw the writing on the wall. They're going to take a commission from you anyway, so I guess we now have like a deadline, a timing. 2024 is when it's going to happen. So Facebook wants your money. It's coming hard for it. When you buy stuff in Meta, they will probably take a cut too, even though they haven't said it yet. Zuckerberg did say that Meta Pay is going to function as a universal wallet for all the digital items you buy or create in the metaverse. It's about proof of ownership. It's starting to sound a lot like crypto to me.
I mean, that is part of the whole metaverse thing, is like owning your digital assets. That could be crypto, but it doesn't have to be crypto. It could just be a wallet. It was like, hey, I own this. That's like so many things. Games do that. Other things do that. That's interesting. Do we have any other specifics about the commission? Because wasn't there talk about like a 47% commission?
So that was a while ago. That was like fairly recent news about a 48% cut from sales in Horizon Worlds, right? And Horizon Worlds is what tentatively for now is Meta's virtual world. 47.5% is the cut, I think, that Meta confirmed. So between 47 and 48. And then 30% itself will
because,
be
because, hey, if you're building something in their reality, they want
to expect to give half of it. That's your rent, people. Virtual realities take rent as well. I don't know. But yeah, 30%
Horizon
of that.
World. Oh, man.
Right? 30% of that will come through the MetaQuest store and 17.5%. The remainder comes from Horizon Worlds itself. So anything that
have
goes.
Have you tried Horizon Worlds,
no,
Sherlyn?
I don't.
Have you tried just wandering around?
Have
AI,
you? Do
like
you like
VR
it?
Stuff? I've done some of it. It is. I mean, we did some coverage too, like as they were like building this up. It's fine, but it's not like you don't want to be there, right? Like they want to build the sort of like AOL chat room experience that we all had like in the 90s, early 2000s. Like our first touch of the internet, I was like, I could chat with people all over the world and they like what I like. And that's so cool. And they're trying to force that. And I don't think people actually want to do that in VR. But there are things like VR chat that kind of get people together, but they're more open and looser. So,
well,
I don't know.
So then to be clear, too, the announcement from this week about Meta not taking commission from creators on Facebook on Instagram and Instagram, it's a different situation, right? The 47.5 was for Meta and Horizon Worlds. This is, we're talking about like revenue sharing for creators on IG and FB. It used to be until 2023, and they've extended that until 2024. It's things like
these are platforms people actually use.
Right, exactly. So there's actually people
nobody's
on there.
On Horizon World.
Right, for now, yeah. Well, who knows? But yeah, so it's things like paid online events, subscriptions, newsletters, and badges that you're so doing your live streams, all these things that you're using the tools of Facebook and Instagram for now you get all of the proceeds. Then in 2024 you're gonna see some of that go to Facebook. So
okay, well, we'll keep an eye out. I don't know what else to say about that. Horizon Worlds is a weird thing. I still am not sure about Facebook's metaverse or Meta's metaverse, but I do like seeing them like explore new ideas, like new ways of building these headsets, and hopefully it spurs on competition. Because my whole issue is when they gobbled up Oculus is that it would kind of kill innovation in this market, and they're at least investing some money into it. Like their Zuckerberg himself is like beyond this and excited; he's into it. So I think that tells us like, yeah. He doesn't want to think about the actual issues facing Meta. He wants to like build the new thing
so
he can leave
this
planet.
Look at this. It's cool.
It's so cool. I just want to leave this reality where everybody's so mad at me all the time. Let's move on. Microsoft doesn't want us to be mad at them all the time because they announced that they're going to be phasing out facial recognition AI that could detect emotions. And they also announced a whole bunch of other things around the ethical usage of AI and artificial intelligence. So I think this kind of comes back to stuff we've been talking about recently, kind of all the AI stuff, the AI sentience from Google and how they were warned, the AI sentience story, because the AI is not sentient, but people warned Google about building AI that could mimic humans, right? That could have realistic conversations and that could have far-reaching social implications, and Google ignored that. And now we have people out there who think the AI may be sentient. So it seems like an issue. Yeah.
It reminds me of more than it reminds me of the Google AI story. This thing actually reminds me of when Amazon had trouble with the tone detecting feature on the Halo band, right? Because anything that says it detects emotions, I feel like this is other besides portraying or pretending to have emotions. That's what we were arguing about last week. This week, this thing is about detecting emotions. And that's what tone Amazon's Halo band was saying it would.
Hey, Amazon's doing a lot of questionable things. A story I was going to bring up later, but it's actually fits in really nicely here, is they announced that they are developing a way to mimic voices. And the idea is to use a little bit of a recording to mimic the voices of your dead relatives. So
I'm sorry, we don't swear a lot on this show, but fuck that. Like... That's fucking bullshit. I'm sorry, but go on.
That is one company like Microsoft thinking about, okay, ethical implications of AI. We don't want it to like look at your face too much. And Amazon is like, I want to resurrect your grandma from the dead in an echo. That's crazy. That is just wild. That it seems like an early thing that they're testing, but I think
did anyone that work on this have people that passed away in their life?
Have you read a single science fiction story of how this could go wrong?
No, they've seen too much Black Mirror. That's what it is. They're like, let's do.
But they've not learned, like, every Black Mirror episode is about, don't do this. This is bad. Every time you do new tech stuff. So yeah, that's not going to be a product. That is a thing they announced that they're working on. But I think if you look online right now, if you look at Twitter, everybody's looking at this story and being like, are you insane? Don't do this. Nobody wants this. Just why? Why? Anyway, I'm glad to hear Microsoft is like thinking a little more strongly about like how it's dealing with the ethics of AI. I think more companies need to do this. I think Amazon needs like an in-house like
human
philosopher
being.
Or somebody a human like being. A human being, but also somebody who is not thinking the Amazon way. Because from people I know that work at Amazon, the company really does a good job of like kind of just bullying you into thinking along their mindset.
The group so think is strong with them.
Exactly. So you need people from outside to be like, hey, this is insane. And what are you doing? It's sort of like the house alarm drone thing, which is that even launching? There are a lot of things they do that seem like bad ideas. But anyway, we will keep an eye on this and see if Amazon really does want to resurrect your people from the dead. In other news, Twitter announced it wants to let you blog. Basically.
A 2003 Blogspot called. It's like, what's
it's
up,
a, it's
Twitter?
A Blogspot. Yeah. It's a blogger. It's a blogger site. They announced a feature called Notes that lets you write more than 280 characters. And get this, you could plug in images, and you could plug in animated GIFs, and you can link to other content around the internet. You could plug in tweets and videos. Amazing. Incredible innovation going on over at Twitter.
I love how with the announcement too, they were like, Twitter is the home for writers. I'm like, no, not well. You want to be the home for writers.
You want to be. I mean, all the writers I know have to be on Twitter for professional
for
reasons.
For publication,
so yeah.
So it's mostly, it's like we're in the media space. Anyone that has some sort of PR need, I think that's what you're talking about, is on Twitter. And
that's
news.
But that's book authors. Like if you want to be in touch with people who read, Twitter is a good platform.
Right, but book authors need PR. Like that's what, like everyone that has a like PR, like a recipe author, any sort of like person has a product to share, they're going to be on Twitter.
But your PR is on Twitter. So that's what I'm saying. Writers do need Twitter, sort of. And I think Twitter is kind of seeing
but
that.
But they're now, they're trying to pull, like, they're like, no, now we're going to be your Medium and your, Substack. What's like a good...
I think that's the thing, right? When Medium launched, which was, WordPress, WordPress is great. I love WordPress because you can actually build your own sites and own your content and yada yada. WordPress is great. Medium was launched by one of the people who used to work at Twitter, right? Like one of the former Twitter executives who launched this thing. It was like, I just want to let people blog. I just want to let people write online easily. I still don't think Medium understands what it wants to be. But clearly, this is an attempt from Twitter to be like, we don't want anybody leaving, right? You stay within our wheelhouse if you want to have deeper thoughts. Twitter is where you think and write, and you are producing value for our platform, so we want to keep you here.
I love that in their announcement post to Twitter, it was like, from the rise of the screenshot announcement tweet to the newsletter boom, a new reality became clear. People were writing long elsewhere and then coming to Twitter to share their work and for the conversation surrounding all those words. Like, took you long enough to realize this, Twitter. Like, what? Okay.
Right. I mean, they're busy. Like, they're busy because they may be bought by a madman soon. Mm. So I don't know. They're dealing with a lot of stuff. But yeah, Twitter also launched Review, or they bought Review, the newsletter company, a couple years ago. And now they're like fully integrating that into Twitter as well.
And they're calling it Twitter Write. They're making a new Twitter profile, calling it Twitter Write. And putting Review in there.
Anything you write online, be it newsletters or blogs or little tweets or like thoughts about your dinner, they want to own that entire platform. So it all does kind of connect. So sure, I don't blame them for doing it. But what do you think?
I'm very curious about how much of this has to do with them wanting to own a cut of the content you publish. Because if you think about how many like crazy tweet thread stories have been turned into movies so far, I feel like, I don't know. I want to be very careful when I read the terms and conditions is what I'm saying. But I am excited to start writing longer on Twitter. I usually like, I'm like, oh, I want to start a blog, but I guess I can do it on Twitter.
You can just start a blog. First of all, you blog for a living, but you can just start a blog.
I have started. I just haven't got around to writing on it.
I think that's it. Like Medium and Twitter kind of are just trying to solve this like base level. I will call it millennial angst in terms of doing anything productive sometimes. Like, I know I should do this. I know I should open up all my email.
My side hustle is not bills. My main hustle.
It's so hard. Yeah. It's hard to do anything basic. And hey, the world is crushing and on fire. So I totally get it. Another thing you want to note, Sherlyn, around this is Twitter's reviving its developer conference after 7 years. And I think that's actually really important. Yes. But first off, what do you think about that?
I mean, it's been long enough that I'm like, they had a developer conference? That's like...
Yeah, I forgot. I totally forgot.
It's called Chirp, which chirpa chirpa cheep cheep, but okay.
Chirp, chirp.
And it's going to happen in San Francisco November 6th this year, I believe. So
it should just be called Tweet Meet, but okay.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah. But I think the argument a lot of people have had about Twitter for a while is that they have not been kind to developers and third parties who want to use Twitter data, right? A lot of Twitter apps were basically locked out when they changed their APIs. They don't want Twitter wanted to own its stuff for so long that they killed off any developer interest. And now they're like, hey, it turns out we need your help if we want to create a thriving platform, an open internet. Like, we help us out, guys. Build some apps. Use our data. Please, please make us more valuable. I think it is very important to note that, this is coming after a point where Twitter needs to do more. Yeah.
And listen to more people, maybe, right? Like, I feel like some of his launches earlier, I will never forget that Fleets launched without voice captioning and that sort of thing. So, ugh.
Simple things. Yeah. Notable that Ben is mentioning, notable this is happening after Jack left, and Jack Dorsey, certainly when he came on and as the driving, creator behind Twitter and the driving person in charge, I think he wanted the company to play less with everybody else. So they kind of wanted to go the Facebook route, whereas I think a lot of us say Twitter, I like Twitter as a platform. Twitter is my favorite social network, but it's best used as a data pipe for the internet that everybody can tap into, that everybody can make use of. So maybe we'll see more of that. We shall see.
Is Parag still the CEO? Because I could swear I saw that Parag stepped down. Parag Agrawal.
I mean...
Maybe I dreamed it. Yeah, he is still the CEO.
Announced things. Yeah, they announced if Elon ends up buying it, things will change. I believe that was the whole thing. But they're in a weird limbo right now. So who knows? Sherlyn, you want to talk about nothing.
Listen, I never want to talk about anything.
Talking about nothing.
I want to always talk about nothing. No. I'm very good at talking about nothing. Nothing is that brand. Remember that former co-founder of OnePlus, whatever, Satish Kalpay, started after leaving OnePlus, and they've been teasing up their first phone called the Nothing Phone 1. For a while, we've seen the pictures of them. We talked about them last week, but we found out that the Nothing Phone is not going to be coming to the US. Womp.
Surprise, surprise.
I'm sure none of us were surprised, but if we've been hyping it up and you in the US are like, I want to buy one, I am sorry. You might have to travel to get it or find another way about it.
Or don't. Spend your money on literally anything else.
This is going to be a first-gen product. And your longtime listeners and viewers of this show know that we do not recommend you buy first gen anything. So I'm not surprised. I'm not disappointed.
Especially from a new company.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This is going to be essential. Well, it's not even going to be like the essential phone either. The essential phone, I feel like, had more of a hook going for it. There you go. Yeah. I just know some people were hype about the Nothing Phone.
Can we just stop talking about this phone? We will just never talk about this phone again.
Never talk about Nothing ever again. I don't know. We'll see.
Nothing again. Let's move on to what we're working on. I want to quickly mention, I visited an AT&T emergency response site here in Georgia. I actually got to do some on-the-ground reporting a couple weeks ago to talk about that, to talk about how they're preparing for emergency responses, things like wildfires, places where they just need to drop down connectivity. So I'm working on a story around that, and I think it's going to be really cool because if you search AT&T emergency response in Gadget, you'll get a story from 2008 written by Nilay Patel. So we have covered this stuff before. It's been a while. And also it's really cool to see how these companies are changing and adopting. 4G didn't exist in 2008. LTE didn't exist back then. So things have changed quite a bit. So I'm hoping to get a story about that soon. What are you up to, Sherlyn?
I have been writing a few guides in addition to doing that background stuff that I was talking about. No, it's going to be a nice, hopefully, fingers crossed, a nice slow summer. I am hopefully then going to be able to have time to do some more deeper dive stories that I love to do, that my my journalism blood's boiling, which is great. And yeah, that's it. We like to do around this time. We like to do around Engadget as well. And so, speaking of guides, Nicole Lee from the team has published the Guide to Smart Displays. If you've been wondering how or like what you should look out for when you're buying a smart display, you can check it out. I will caution any of you Apple people that there is no Apple smart display. These are all Amazon or Google branded devices.
You could get a HomePod and you could like tape an iPad to it. Yeah, that's a smart display. Yeah. That's an Apple smart
display. So you can go check that out. Davinder, you have something to shout out as well.
Yeah, shouting out our TikTok channel.
Yes.
Everyone's watching TikTok these days, and Engadget is on TikTok. I just did a TikTok about the MacBook Pro. Sherlyn, you've done a bunch about you having too many devices. And
well, that and the MacBook Air,
And the MacBook Air. You shot some footage yourself on TikTok. So I think it's a fun platform. I spend some time with my daughter because she likes the short videos there. I think it's worth checking out. Follow us if you're using TikTok. I also know that they're in the news about data leaks going back to China and whatnot. So, hey, we are paying attention to all that stuff. It's hard to trust any of these social media companies, but in terms of a product I actually like using, I would say TikTok is at least there. I like the videos. Check us out on TikTok if you're using it. Let's move on to our picks for the week, our pop culture picks. Sherlyn, what do you got?
I went back into my repository of like recs that I save. I'm like, I have a long list for weeks when I don't have anything to recommend, because recently I've just been rewatching Game of Thrones. It's weird. Anyway, my recommendation from a while back is Making Fun. It's a TV show on Netflix. I don't know if you've heard of it, Davindra.
I think so. Yeah.
Is this like reality-ish series of these like grumpy old men who are very skilled at woodworking or like just making things, right? But then the twist is that they every week choose a proposal from a bunch of kids and they make the thing. So it's the start of every episode. You've got a bunch of kids coming in with like ideas of what they want the team to make, and they pitch it. They're like, oh, I want to make a unicorn that flies, but it also poops or something. Like, it's just kids being kids. So the first episode, it's not a spoiler or anything to say that what they did was build a giant T-Rex that spits out tacos.
I've heard about the show, and I hear the adults hate the kids.
They do. Like, well, that's the shtick, right? The shtick is that they hate this. And the entire time, they're just like, these dumbass, like little cretins or whatever are making us do this thing. And then the kids will like die, like ring in at the middle of the project, be like, no, we want you to add a toilet to the taco pooping dinosaur because it has to, we need to poop when we eat tacos. Apparently, I don't know, but it's fun to like just
Kids love things that poop.
It's a combination of like whimsy with the kids and like the grumpy old guys building the stuff, but they're like so incredibly skilled. Like, I'm in the zone where I'm like trying to learn more about construction for some reason. So I'm like, all right, I know what this plane machine does. I don't know what they're called.
This plane machine does. You could take actual woodworking lessons and stuff for length. They do that all over the place. Yeah. That's cool. Thanks for sharing that out.
Thanks.
I'm going to highlight a couple of things. If you talk to anybody who plays games right now, everybody's talking about Neon White, which is a cool new kind of like a first-person shooter / puzzle game / like speed run game. It is sort of like everybody distilled. They distilled the cool 90s anime stuff. It is about people who are cast to hell, who are brought to heaven to defeat demons that are trying to destroy the kingdom of heaven. And it's also like has Steve Bloom, the voice of Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop, like your character is voiced by him. Lots of great voice acting, lots of great anime character work. It is a cool, fun game.
Okay,
it just feels good to play. So when I need to like rest my brain for a little, I can hop into this game. Do a couple levels. The levels are really short. They're like 30 to 45 seconds. And the whole point of it is that you try to do it until you're faster and faster and try to be the fastest in the world. I think it's a lot of fun. I love the vibe. I love the voice acting and the writing. It is what I would call an anime-ass anime game. So, you know.
Right.
Very anime. Neon White is great. I'm also watching Irma Vep on HBO, which is, hey, I don't know if anybody's going to listen to me here, but I love the French director Olivier Assayas. And this is sort of like a redo, not quite remake. It is like a reconsidering of a movie he made in the 90s, also called Irma Vep. And this show is all about a kind of like a movie star played by Alicia Vikander. And she is just in the process of making a TV show called Irma Vep. It is a remake of a classic, like, silent film, Les Vampires. So Alicia Vikander is great. This is just like a cool thing.
Oh, this is very meta. I got so confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is a show about her as a movie star. It's also a show about a director trying to remake Irma Vep while this director is remaking Irma Vep again. It is very, very meta. It is really fun. If you want to see people just like bounce around France and, you know, do fun movie industry stuff, I think it's worth watching. It's Irma Vep. It's on HBO Max. So that's what I've got for this week.
Well, that's it for the episode, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I chat about movies and TV at the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to tell me the million reasons you want to get the Nothing phone, you can send them to me. I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.
The math, she is mathing, because this is exactly what it's supposed to do.